with, of course, elements of the United Nations model forming part of it. This OECD model convention forms the basis for virtually every single tax treaty entered into in the world today. However, a number of these articles are different from the normal South African approach. These articles and some and the other articles of interest relating to time periods, percentages of withholding tax in the South Africa-German double taxation agreement are as follows. In relation to Article 5, permanent establishment, the importance of permanent establishment is that if you have an enterprise or company which is a resident of one state doing business in the other state, it is not taxable in the other.
Sorry, which document are you now?
Double taxation. Okay. Double taxation formal ratification.
Page 4.
Actually, page 1. The bottom slide. I don't know how they printed this.
What is
it?
Which?
Germany.
Yeah, that's why I ran away. That's why I ran away.
Welcome to
yeah. We are going to share this. Okay? You know, I mean the.
Yeah.
I don't have also.
This one.
Can we just give time that we get the correct documentation in front of us?
Headed Article 5, Permanent Establishment. Sorry about that, Jay. Sorry, as I was saying, the importance of the concept of permanent establishment is if you have a company resident of one state doing business in the other state, it will not be liable for tax in that other state until it crosses a threshold. And that threshold is permanent establishment. It's defined in all the treaties as a fixed place of business. Now, of course, in relation to a construction site, by its nature, this is a temporary activity in that we hope at some stage they will finish building. So what we do in relation to these temporary activities is introduce a specific time period for that construction or building. In the South Africa-Germany Treaty, that time limit is 12 months. So immediately the construction activities or building site continues for more than 12 months, it's a permanent establishment and therefore is taxable in the state in which the activity takes place. Turning to the next slide, Article 8, Shipping and Air Transport. Paragraph 2B provides that profits from the operation of ships and aircraft in international traffic shall include profits from the use or rental of containers, including trailers and ancillary equipment, which are used in transporting the containers in international traffic. The principle in Article 8 for shipping and air transport says normally that these profits are taxable only in the state of residence of the company operating. So on that basis, South African Airways would be taxable on its profits only in South Africa, whereas alternately, Lufthansa would be taxable on its profits only in Germany. Turning to the next one, Article 10, dividends. There's a limitation on the withholding tax which may be imposed in the source state, that's the state in which the company is a resident. That limitation is, in this treaty, 5% where the shareholding is at least 10%, and 15% in respect of all other dividends, portfolio investments. Paragraph 3 of Article 10 provides that income from rights or debt claims which participate in profits and which are deductible in determining the profit of the debtor would remain taxable under the domestic law of the source state. The reason for that is that if this income in fact is an above the line deduction, in other words it reduces taxable income, then it should not be classed as a dividend which is paid after tax. Paragraph 4 of the article provides that the term dividends would include income derived by the entities referred to in paragraph 3, and those are two German entities, one of which, and excuse my pronunciation, is probably not very good, the Stille Gesellschaft, would be the silent partnership. And payments made to silent partners are treated, in fact, as dividends. Turning to the next slide, Article 11 on interest, the treaty provides that interest is taxable only in the state of residence of the beneficial owner of the interest. This is also the case with royalties under Article 12. We look for the beneficial owner, and in his state of residence, there's the sole right of taxation. The next slide, Article 13, capital gains. Paragraph 2 provides that the gains from the alienation of shares and similar rights in a company whose assets consist directly or indirectly, principally of immovable properties, may be taxed in the state in which the immovable property is situated. The reason for that, Chair, is that the principle in this article is that immovable property, gains on the sale of immovable property, should always be subjected to tax in the state where that immovable property is situated. However, with the immovable property is in the company and they sell the shares, a dividend would normally apply. So what you do with this provision is to say, if the value of those shares is created principally, in other words, more than 50%, by immovable property situated in a state, that state should also have the right then to tax the profit on the sale of the shares, because the value lies in the immovable property. Paragraph 6 deals with the situation of an exit tax, I could call it that, in relation to capital gains. Because what it's saying is, if a resident of one state, let's say a resident of Germany, emigrates to South Africa, Germany, of course, when he leaves, would like to tax the appreciated value of his assets when he leaves that country. This paragraph reinforces that right. What we have negotiated in this treaty is that while Germany may tax the appreciation valued on the date that he leaves Germany, they can only tax the appreciation up to that date. If he still holds those assets and there's subsequent appreciation while he's a resident of South Africa, it's not included in that right. So that's for South Africa to tax. Article 14, dealing with income from employment, provides that the provisions of paragraph 2, which is an exemption in the source state where services are rendered for less than 183 days, shall not apply to remuneration for employment within the framework of the hiring out of labour. Article 16, dealing with entertainers and sports persons. Paragraph 2 of this article provides that the personal activities which are exercised in the other state should include remuneration paid for the use of or the right to use the name, picture, or other personal rights of entertainers and sports persons, as well as any consideration for the recording and transmission of the activities mentioned in paragraph 1, that as entertainers and sports persons by radio or television. So what all this paragraph is doing is clarifying the kind of income which should be taxable in the state in which the activities of these people are in fact exercised. So if you get a South African soccer player who goes and plays a match in Germany, Germany would have an immediate right of taxation of whatever he earns from performing his activities in Germany. And of course the opposite would also apply. This just says, should he get any other income from transmission of his activities on radio or television, that's included in what can be taxed. This is a normal approach to this particular article. Article 17, that's the next slide, deals with pensions, annuities, and similar payments. And here we deal with social security payments. This, of course, was more from the German side. Our social security payments, I think, are way under the income tax limit, so there's no tax payable there. But the principle is that the state that pays a social security benefit should have the sole right of taxation of that benefit. That's in paragraph 2. Paragraph 3 refers to recurrent or non-recurrent payments made by one of the states in respect of damages resulting from war, political persecution. This, of course, is a proposal from Germany, and it goes back in history to the Second World War and the results of that. Article 26, dealing with limitation of benefits. In a nutshell, Chair, what it's saying in A and B, under A it says that nothing in this treaty stops the state from imposing the anti-abuse provisions in its domestic law. Now, that's a normal approach. I guess this is virtually using a belt and braces approach. Although the commentary would say this is the case, it's also reduced to writing in this treaty. Also under B, it says that if you have domestic law provisions relating to controlled foreign corporations, which in Germany is called income under the fourth part of the German law on external tax relations, then nothing in the treaty should stop you applying those domestic law provisions either. That, of course, would be totally in line with how we would approach it from a South African point of view. Finally, in the protocol, there are a number of provisions which explain and clarify issues of interpretation in the treaty, the main body of the treaty. Paragraph 2, however, deals with a situation which arose from the earlier treaty to which my colleague Yanga referred earlier. That old treaty provided that local recruits of an embassy would be taxable only by the state which paid them. This, of course, is not in line with current international practice. So when we negotiated this with Germany, we told them that we wanted rather to follow the international approach, which was that where an embassy in a country employs local recruits, those local recruits, if they are residents and nationals of that country, should have the sole right to tax it, as opposed to the country paying the salary. They agreed to that. But the problem was that they had a number of older employees in the embassy who'd been there for many years, and this change would have had a fairly dramatic result on the tax they paid, because they had been taxed in the past in Germany. If you related that to South African rand and imposed tax, the tax burden, of course, would have been much higher in South Africa. So what we agreed was to bring in a sunset clause, which says that in relation to people, local recruits, should I say, employed in the German embassy in South Africa, on 31st of March 2000, they would have a two-year window period. So from when this treaty enters into force, for a period of 2 years, they will continue to be taxed in Germany. After that, it reverts to South Africa. People who joined, local recruits who joined the German embassy subsequent to 31 March 2000, they would be taxable only in South Africa. And that was how we got agreement, consensus, in changing this whole approach. And Chair, those are the comments that I have on the treaty with Germany.
Thank you for your presentation. I think it was clear. You did your homework. The Minister signed the agreement already?
Yes, Chair. Germany and Mexico have been signed.
Thank you. Honourable members, any questions? Honourable Makapule?
Honourable Harris?
Thanks, Chair. In stage two of this ratification of Germany and Mexico, it is written here, hence the current tax treaty between South Africa and Germany does not cover certain aspects. Which are those other aspects?
From the second presentation, Article 13, just a point of clarity. You said, I gather that if you dispose of shares that consist mainly of an immovable asset, so if you have shares in Germany that consisted of South African property, when you dispose of them, you would be taxed capital gains tax in South Africa and capital gains tax in Germany. So you would effectively be double taxed, if that's the point you made. And then, just a more general question, in the absence of one of these agreements, what is the appeal mechanism to prevent you being double taxed, or are you just automatically double taxed?
Mm. Any other questions? I want to welcome, and it's a sincere welcome to Honourable Mashishiwe, Honourable Makubule, Honourable Mokoru to be present at this meeting. It was quite a challenge to get along this morning, but welcome and we appreciate your presence. You may answer.
The current tax treaty between South Africa and Germany, the one that is in existence now, is an old treaty which was signed in 1975. So by ratifying this one, we're going to bring in a new treaty, and it will terminate the old treaty as soon as this one is enforced. Mm-hmm. The new one has got an article dealing with capital gains tax. The old one didn't have an article because South Africa didn't have a capital gains tax system. Also, the new one, as Ron was explaining, has got an article dealing with the taxation of local recruits. It clarifies that. So there are other aspects that were not present in the old treaty that will be present in the new treaty.
Thank you, Chair. To address the second question. It's true that when we deal with Article 13 on capital gains, I think the example was somebody with shares in a German company, but the value of those shares was created by South African immovable property. Yeah. If those shares are sold, South Africa would be able to say, we have a right under the treaty to tax this because the source of the value is the immovable property in South Africa. Clearly, if the seller was a resident of Germany, they would also retain their right of taxation, and as you correctly point out, that could be double taxation. That double taxation is eliminated in the treaty under the article dealing with the elimination of double taxation. Under South African law, we give a credit for the foreign tax paid. But in this particular example, South Africa would be the source state because that's where the immovable property is situated, which creates the value of the share. And it's never the source state which has to eliminate double taxation. It's the resident state. So in that example, Germany would be required to eliminate double taxation. Now, Germany uses a different method. They use an exemption method. And that exemption method would say that if this income has been taxed in the source state, then in Germany I exempt it. And so they would eliminate double taxation. If in your example it worked the other way around, where the property was Germany, well, source would be there. If we taxed it in South Africa, we would have to give a credit for the German tax paid up to the amount of the South African tax, and that's how we would eliminate it. And finally, is there a way of eliminating double taxation other than through the treaty? Yes. Section 6 quater of the Income Tax Act provides a unilateral relief provision for double taxation under South African law. Thank you, Chair.
Any follow-up?
Yes, follow-up question. Thanks. I'm seeing here the export from South Africa to Chile 2008 is 530 million, but I don't see any money invested by South Africa to Chile. What could be the...
We're coming to that in Germany and Mexico.
We're coming to that one. It's quite a competition between South Africa and Chile for table grapes in December, January. Coming from my province in the Northern Cape. It's battling to get on the Europe market first. Any other questions? Nothing. Oh, sorry.
Just a very quick follow-up on that the last point about the unilateral exemption. Am I right in saying if you appeal to that provision, you would have to take it to a court to work out the specific issues? Or, I mean, does the existence of a treaty like this obviously make provisions for specific concerns, whereas if you've got a unilateral exemption, there has to be some other mechanism of resolving it?
if I may, Chair, no, you would not have to resort to courts as such. It's just a normal provision in the Income Tax Act, which taxpayers would be free to use as they would be free to use any other provision. And it provides that if income is taxable in South Africa and you pay foreign tax on that, and provided the source is not South African, so... We back to that situation where if you're the source country, then it's not your job to eliminate double taxation. But if you're a South African resident and you've been taxed on income sourced in another country, that Section 6 quad gives you an automatic right to actually claim the foreign taxes paid as a credit against the South African tax. It's I think, as simple as that.
Yeah. Chair, but still my question stands, that I see here Germany invested 2007 and South Africa, but I don't see 2008 of both countries. Is there any reason?
Okay. Thank you, Chair, Honorable Member. We get the figures of investment from the Reserve Bank because whenever a South African wants to put money offshore, he has to go via the Reserve Bank for exchange control approval. And whenever the money is coming here, so Reserve Bank has got those figures. So we don't have the 2008 yet because the Reserve Bank is lagging a year behind the total number of figures. So we'll get them in the next quarter.
Covered?
I'm covered, thanks.
Great. Any other questions? So that's the agreement with Germany. Then we take the next one is on Mexico. Right? You can proceed.
Thank you, Chair.
International section.
I want to start this one on Article 4, residents. This is where differences in approach first start. Article 4, first of all, defines what is a resident of a contracting state, and the importance of that is that the benefits of the treaty apply only to residents of one or the other contracting state. However, due to the definition of resident in any domestic tax legislation, you get a lot of instances where you can be a resident of more than one state for tax purposes. As an example, if I'm sent to another country for 7 or 8 months, inevitably their domestic law would say if you're in my country for more than 183 days, you're a resident for tax purposes. Whereas in South Africa, our law would be saying, but you're still ordinarily a resident in South Africa. So I would be a tax resident of two states. That, of course, makes the treaty impossible to interpret and apply. So what we have in paragraph 3 of this article is a tiebreaker rule in relation to dual residence for people other than individuals, in this case, companies. And that provides that where a company has dual residence for tax purposes, then the competent authorities of the two states shall by mutual agreement settle the question of which state should claim that company as its resident only. If the two authorities cannot agree, if the two states cannot agree, then in the absence of such agreement, the person shall be considered to be outside the scope of the agreement. In other words, that company would not qualify for the benefits of the agreement. We found that this is a rather good way of breaking any impasse created by this dual residence, for the simple reason that it's different to individuals. Individuals don't always have a say as to where they are at any point in time. Particularly employees could be sent anywhere and create tax residence. But for companies, it's a little bit different. And often, we found that dual residence is created for a reason. And that reason very often shares to do with matters of not paying tax as opposed to paying tax. When you have this kind of provision, which says if the two states cannot agree which state should claim that company as a resident, they don't qualify for the benefits, we find that the company solves the problem themselves. Because residence is all about where you incorporated, where your place of effective management, etc. is. And they would then order their affairs accordingly, and therefore we have very few problems when we use this approach. Paragraph 4, excuse me, addresses the question of partnerships or trusts which are flowed through entities. And if I could use that the example of a partnership, Chair, we do not tax the partnership in South Africa. We look through the partnership and we tax the individual partners as such. So what this paragraph says is that the provisions of the treaty will apply to the items of income which become taxable in the hands of a resident. So if the partner is a resident in your country and he's being taxed on partnership income, then the treaty applies to him rather than the partnership, because the partnership is what we would call fiscally transparent. We work through it. Moving then to Article 5, permanent establishment. This, once again, refers to building sites, construction, assembly, installation projects, the time limit, which is used for the existence of a PE, permanent establishment, is 12 months. Paragraph 6, also in permanent establishment, deals with insurance. Now, the normal approach to insurance is, if an insurance company is doing business in your country through a branch, it's a permanent establishment. We would tax the profits. Equally, if they only have agents in your country, we would tax the business written by those agents, provided they are dependent agents of that insurance company. This paragraph, although it's not a normal inclusion in South Africa's treaties, reinforces that principle. It's an addition which comes from the United Nations model, and although it deals specifically with this issue of insurance, it adds nothing new for South Africa in other treaties, because in other treaties we have, in any case, the provision of a fixed place of business for insurance companies, and we also have the normal provision on dependent agents, which create a permanent establishment for their principal. So either way, we would have taxing rights in respect of insurance companies insuring risks on our territory. This is merely belt and braces, Chen. Article 7, business profits. The taxation of business profits is allowed in the source state, and now I'm talking a company which is a resident of one state doing business in the other state through a permanent establishment which we define in Article 5. What we then say is that other states may tax the profits, but only the profits which are attributable to the business carried on in that permanent establishment. Now, and once again, I have to be diplomatic, Chair. Mexico has a neighbor, a rather big neighbor, just a little bit north. So I won't mention any names. But over the years, they've had a number of problems with various schemes of trying to evade Mexican tax coming from the north. So it's become an absolute bottom line provision in their treaties that not only should Mexico have the right to tax the activities which take place in a permanent establishment, but if this company in the other country does business in separate transactions directly into that country and not through the PE, they would tax the profits from those separate transactions in the PE, in the permanent establishment. So we call it a force of attraction rule, that income is placed into the PE and taxed as such in that country. And that, of course, is to combat this form of abuse. We had to accept that this was a very important provision for the Mexicans, but not so in relation to South Africans. So what we did include was a test, and the test is that if those transactions separate from the permanent establishment are not shown to be part of a scheme of tax evasion, then that force of attraction rule would not apply. So we agreed, and they agreed on that basis. Article 9 deals with associated enterprises, and this is the article we use to combat transfer pricing, Chair, which I think you know is a real problem for tax authorities around the world. Now, paragraph 1 of Article 9 says that if someone's been engaged in transfer pricing in your country, you may adjust the profits to what they would have been at arm's length. Paragraph 2 then says if you've lifted the profits in this country, you've created double taxation because they've already been taxed in the other country, so the other country has to make a corresponding adjustment, lower the profits on its side in order to eliminate this double taxation. Paragraph 3, however, of this treaty provides that that corresponding adjustment in paragraph 2 shall not apply in the case of fraud, gross negligence, or willful default. So that's a further penalty where fraud, negligence, or default has been used. Article 10, dividends. The withholding rates in the South Africa, Mexico, DTA are in fact the standard rates which are in most South African treaties today. 5% for a shareholding of at least 10%, 10% in respect of all other dividends. Article 11, interest. The source state has a limitation of 10%. Paragraph 8 deals with what happens under thin capitalization rules in a country. Now, South Africa, of course, also has thin capitalization rules, which ensure that a company is not financed solely by debt, but rather by equity and by debt. So where there's excessive funding of that company through debt, we can recharacterize the excessive interest paid as a dividend. Article 8 provides that the interest which has been recharacterized as a dividend will be dealt with under Article 10, which is dividends rather than interest. Article 12, royalty. The withholding tax from the source state under this article is a 10% limit. Article 21, limitation of benefits, provides that a person which is a resident of a contracting state shall not be entitled under this agreement to relief from taxation in the other contracting state unless the requirements in that article are met. The aim of this article is to ensure that the benefits of the treaty apply only to genuine residents of the two states. Article 26 deals with assistance in the collection of taxes, and this, as I said when I started, is a really important provision for the tax authorities, because on the basis of reciprocity, it allows one state to collect outstanding taxes on behalf of the other state, which is a great improvement, Chair, on the position as it was some years ago. Finally, the protocol, once again, contains a number of clarifications and explanations of provisions in this agreement, which are in line with normal treaty interpretation, but are there to ensure that there's a consistent approach in interpretation and application of this treaty, which, of course, is very important. So those are the comments on Mexico, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? On the Mexican agreement? None? Satisfied? Honourable members, if we are in agreement, it seems to be the case, our committee must take a decision on these two international agreements. And I'm going to read to you, because it must be signed in this meeting. Sorry. And it will be then tabled in the House. Report of the Select Committee on the agreement between the Republic of South Africa and the Federal Republic of Germany for the avoidance of double taxation with respect to taxes on income and on capital, dated 14 October 2009. The Select Committee on Finance and Appropriation, having considered the agreement between the Republic of South Africa and the Federal Republic of Germany for the avoidance of double taxation with respect to taxes on income and on capital, refer to it in terms of Section 231(2) of the Constitution, 1996, reports that it approves the agreement. This is on the RSA Germany agreement. Can we get a proposal? Seconder?
Second.
Thank you. Second one is with regard to the agreement between South Africa and the Mexican states. Report of the Select Committee on the agreement between the Republic of South Africa and the United Mexican States for the avoidance of double taxation and the prevention of fiscal evasion with respect to taxes on income dated 14 October 2009. The Select Committee on Finance and Appropriations, having considered the agreement between the Republic of South Africa and United Mexican States for the avoidance of tax, double taxation and the prevention of fiscal evasion with respect to taxes on income referred to it in terms of Section 231(2) of the Constitution 1996, reports that it approves the agreement. Agreement?
Yeah.
Can I get a proposer? Seconder? Thank you. It's been signed, it's been on the record. Thank the honorable members for their cooperation in this regard. Then I've got, are there any other briefings you want to do with us? I don't know what's happening on the floor.
Chair, thank you. The formal ratification is of course an absolute requirement. We can't have ratification without the recommendation from your committee. The other part which we have here are treaties which have not yet been signed. So the purpose of putting them to the committee now was to merely give you an indication of what was contained in those treaties on the same basis as what we have just done with Germany and with Mexico. It does not take away from the effect, from the fact, sorry, that once they are signed, we would still come back to the committee for the formal ratification. So, Chair, I don't know what your time limits are like, but if you want, we can do presentations on these five on a preliminary basis. At the end of the day, we would still be coming back to the committee after signature for formal ratification.
More members? Seems to me there's agreement that we'll call you in when you are ready, when the other agreements have been signed. Then you can come back.
Thank you very much, Jim.
Honourable members, that please be seated. Don't leave. That brings us to the end of this session. We're going to release our friends from class, but I think we must just in committee discuss a few things regarding future meetings. Thank you for your presentation. You can, remember, you can still get you a cup of coffee. I see his coffee at the back.
Yeah.
This morning I went to the government.